He was born where the Lowells spoke only to the Cabots, and the Cabots spoke only to God. I'm Don Swaim with BookBeat. The life of the poet Robert Lowell was one of sensitivity, cursed with rebellion and madness. Ian Hamilton writes of the poet in a major biography. Strangely, to the day he died, Hamilton notes, Lowell had trouble spelling some of the most simple words.
Some people say that he suffered from a form of dyslexia. And certainly his handwriting to the end remained the handwriting of a 13-year-old.
Throughout Lowell's life as a poet and teacher, he suffered repeated mental breakdowns.
He would have bouts of a sustained high hyperactivity. He would have megalomaniac delusions. He would have religious delusions. He would have paranoid delusions. He would, on occasions, fall in love with some utterly inappropriate lady and decide he was going to throw over his old life, take up with this new girl. He would buy her an apartment and announce to all his friends and indeed to his wife that he was going to get married. And all this turbulence would last for maybe sort of 2, 3, 4 weeks until finally he was hospitalized. He was treated with one or another of the psychiatric drugs, or indeed with electric shock therapy, and he would gradually come down.
Biographer Ian Hamilton notes that all three of Lowell's marriages failed, although his union with writer Elizabeth Hardwick lasted the longest, 20 years.
At the end of his life, I think he was intending to go back to Elizabeth Hardwick. And Elizabeth Hardwick, I think most readers of this book would agree, does emerge as the heroine of the book. Enormous loyalty and steadfastness and belief in him as a genius.
Lowell died in 1977 of a heart attack in a taxicab en route from Kennedy Airport to Hardwick's apartment on Manhattan's West Side. More about Lowell in my next report. I'm Don Swaim with BookBeat. I'm Don Swaim with BookBeat. Ian Hamilton, whose biography of Robert Lowell has received much critical attention, thinks that despite Lowell's mental problems, the poet will be judged favorably for generations ahead.
He may be slightly out of fashion here now. That's my feeling. And this often happens to a poet. Within the few years immediately after his death, there's a sort of general falling off. But I would have said that in years to come, when the record is established, that Lowell will be thought of as the most important American poet of the post-war years.
Hamilton says much of Lowell's early work was impenetrable because of his elitist background that demanded hard reading and a scholarly approach. And Hamilton says much of Lowell's later work also was obscure because it was so autobiographical.
That is rather off-putting, I agree. But I think that in the middle of those two extremes, you have some very lucid, very available work, the work in Life Studies, it seems to me. You don't need footnotes to follow. They're very powerful, direct, personal poems about a man in a state of extreme suffering, and it's fairly clear what the extreme suffering is.
In the 40s, Lowell was jailed as a conscientious objector.
When he refused military service in 1943, He doesn't just write his letter to the local draft board, he writes it to President Roosevelt himself and says, as one member of an old family writing to another member of an old American family, I hereby tell you I'm not going to fight.
Lowell also made headlines by refusing to attend a Johnson White House function to protest the Vietnam War.
In some way, he did take these stands and feel himself to be representing the arts, representing that aspect of America. And where he got that sense of his own representative importance from, it's hard to say. It must have had something to do with being a Lowell, being an American aristocrat.
Ian Hamilton, author of the first full-scale biography of Robert Lowell. For BookBeat, I'm Don Swaim.